when we start to understand them as their own being, just like us, I think that that really helps us to connect to them and know that we are nature, they are nature, we are the same. And then that really helps us to respect and look after them on a new level, and really to appreciate the amazing magic and medicine that they share with us. There's just a deep reverence for this world that we're sharing with them, and this, you know, relationship with that we have. I mean, just, you know, looking at the breath between us, with the oxygen and the carbon dioxide, we're helping each other. And my mum always taught me to look at plants as plant people.
Hello and welcome to Curious Ones podcast by Andara. I'm Yael Ginsberg, the host of the podcast, a yoga and meditation teacher and philosophy lover. Each week you will hear eye-opening interviews with the different teachers of the Andara Yoga Institute, located in beautiful Baja, Mexico, along with other teachers that pass through here. This life-changing knowledge shared through authentic, heartfelt communication will help you live a happier, more fulfilled, and connected life. Let's dive in. Hello, welcome back to Curious Ones podcast by Andara. I'm Yael Ginsberg, and today I have the beautiful Anya Lilly with me. Anya is a forager, a chef, and the founder of Meadow Sweet Retreats in Italy. We met at Andara probably like a year and a half ago or 2 years ago. And we wanted to do this podcast since, and here we are. So welcome to the podcast, Anya.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the podcast. So I'm so excited to speak to you again after all this time and, yeah, share a little piece of my life with you.
So all morning I was looking at the Meadow Sweet Retreat Instagram page and like the website, and I was just so inspired. I felt this incredible calling to go into the woods and like hug the trees and kiss the flowers and just be in nature. So it was incredible how I felt that just from looking at the pictures of the place. So I can't wait until I get to come visit and maybe host a retreat there of my own. Getting into the conversation, I would love to hear a little bit about your background and where did you get this love of plants and nature that you so strongly have?
Well, I think I've had a really deep connection to nature in my heart and my body and my soul forever. I definitely say that I was born into a home of a nature lover. My mum's a herbalist. And my dad has been a yoga teacher since, I think, like the 80s, so before I was born. So their upbringing for me, we lived in the countryside in England, and it was very in tune with nature. And my sort of most early memories are usually like in the garden with my mom and her teaching me about wild herbs. And, you know, we never went to the doctor as kids. It was always the tinctures that she'd made and herbs soaked in honey. And I can remember like having a cough and having this like honey elixir that had things like wild oregano and thyme, and that was, you know, that was the medicine. And so I really already had this strong connection to the plants. And growing up, I sort of didn't really acknowledge it. It was something that was just so normal for me that it wasn't until I decided that I was really passionate about cooking that, you know, I was living in Bali a few years ago and cooking for retreats, and it kind of all started to like come back to me, this like, wow, I have this like really strong like encyclopedia in my head about plants and medicinal plants, and it's all come from just growing up with it and just being in the garden with my mom, or being in the forest with my mom, or the meadows, and making teas and potions and stuff with her. And then I was bringing it a lot into the food that I was making. I use a lot of medicinal herbs in the cooking that I do, and a lot of you know, food is medicine. In the various career journeys that I've been on with that around the world, I learned beekeeping as well when I was living in New York a few years ago, and everything's just kind of been like compiling for me to, I think, bring me to Meadowsweet, because when I got here to Tuscany, it felt like all of this knowledge and learning that I was having was coming together to create retreats, which is, I mean, I had no idea that that was what was going to be born, but it was apparent when I got here and I saw all the amazing things to forage in the forest and the meadows, and how me and my mum could grow food together here. And I don't know if that's actually answered your question, but there's definitely a deep, deep, long, long love and relationship with plants and nature, and that is why Meadowsweet is what it is, and that is why we wanted to create a space where people could connect deeply to nature themselves and feel the friendship that we have with plants. That's really a main, you know, heart of the retreat company is to, yeah, create a friendship with plants, I think.
I love that. A friendship with plants. And I think how you described this really coming back to nature, it's incredible, because we live so disconnected from nature and so far away from actually the real world. As you know, we tend to say, like, I'm going back to the real world, meaning the city that we live in, and actually the real world is really nature. And I also found it really amazing how you connected all the different things that you did, like the different stops on your way, or different turns that you've gone through, and how they all came together in this project, or this experience that you are now creating for yourself and also for many other people. You mentioned that really you grew up with the plants from a young age, and I think also that is a kind of unique. Not many of us do. What has been something that you've learned from your mother about plants?
Well, a lot. my mum, when she's teaching me and other people about foraging, she talks about intuitive foraging, intuitive herbalism. So, and this is something that I've read that many indigenous cultures also bring into their relationship with plants, is where they see the plant as, I can't really explain it, as plant people, rather than just this thing, you know. It is a sunflower. She is a sunflower. And when we start to understand them as their own being, just like us, I think that that really helps us to connect to them and know that we are nature, they are nature, we are the same. And then that really helps us to respect and look after them on a new level and really to appreciate the amazing magic and medicine that they share with us. I mean, you know, if we start to think about the trees as she and he and they, there's just a deep reverence for this world that we're sharing with them, and this, you know, relationship with that we have. I mean, just, you know, looking at the breath between us with the oxygen and the carbon dioxide, we're helping each other. And my mum always taught me to look at plants as plant people, and that really help me be respectful and sparing. And when we go out foraging, we never pick more than what we need for something. We, you know, we try to never waste anything. I mean, growing your own food is amazing because it means that you don't buy punnets of stuff and then put them in the fridge and waste it. You know, you say like, okay, tonight I need 5 tomatoes, and then you leave the rest on the vine. Or if they're really ripening, then you know how much energy has gone from yourself and the plant to create that beautiful fruit. So you're very precious about preserving it and how you share it and how you cook it. And yeah, she really shared with me this beautiful respect for plants. And like I was saying about a friendship, like when I mean, I've always, yeah, seen them as that, as these plant people. And that that's really fortunate for me, because it also meant that wherever I went, I felt like I had friends, which is funny. But a lot of people say to me, like, especially where we live here in the mountains, a lot of people come here and they say, oh God, you must be so lonely when there isn't people here. And I'm like, oh, actually, not really, because I walk around and I see calendula and I'm like, oh, hey, calendula. Thanks for helping me with, you know, that cut that I had on my hand. Or, you know, I know the different trees by name, and I can walk around the forest and I can recognize the mushrooms. And this is like, there's this constant like conversation, communication that's happening with me and this world that's around me. Sometimes it's like almost noisy. There's so many of them, like, hey, look at me. Like, you know, like when they're in flower, like they're all like, whoa, check out me. So it's really like, yeah, it's such a blessing to have that knowledge. And that's what we try to teach when people come here, because we live in, like you say, a world of like disassociation, disconnect, and deep loneliness. Like, wow, the loneliness that people feel in a city, and especially, and you know, maybe that comes down to the fact that they don't have so many plant people around them. You know, like people always say that they're so much happier when they have house plants, right? So maybe mm-hmm. there's something like that.
100% behind the computer here, there's a big bench full of plants. I always have flowers in my house because I don't live in the forest yet.
Yeah, and yes. you know, don't you, when you've got your house plants and you're feeding them and they're thriving, you feel happy and you talk to them, and you know, you
100%
have a relationship with them. So it's a small thing, but I think it can be a very impactful, like, mind shift change to think about plants in that way.
100%.
And that's something that that will naturally be taught to my daughter as well. And She's out with my mom at the moment looking at, I can see her outside looking at daddy lines together. So, yeah, I will pass on that gift.
Wow, that's incredible. And I feel so connected to what you're saying, because I think that really we do live in this ebb and flow. As you said, we breathe together. It's not just us and other people, it's us and all of nature that is around us. Also in yoga, the meaning of the word yoga, union, it's about knowing that we're all the time in this connection with everything that is around us. But our modern lives really put the focus on other things rather than just the simple things that you don't have to buy with money. You don't have to achieve anything in order to get just the things that are really around us if we choose to see them. Maybe that's what I was so drawn to in the pictures in your Instagram, because it was really about being in this connection. Like you could tangibly feel the connection even through the photos. And I really believe how important it is to be in this constant flow with life. And you spoke about this disassociation that we experience and this loneliness that many, many people experience. And I thought that was just incredible how you mentioned that it's like, it's actually plant people and friends, and that's the cure for loneliness.
Yeah, it really can be. Yeah, I mean, my mum, she a couple of years ago split up with her partner of many, many years, and it was a shock to us all. Like, he'd been like a second dad to me, and I remember thinking, like, how is she going to cope with the loneliness of it? And she just said, like, you know, the garden was my therapy. And she's spent, you know, a lot of deep listening time in nature, and that really just like helped her come back to herself and not only see the beauty in nature, but see the beauty in herself, and just have. And she's now just thriving. She's just, you know, in nature doing her thing, teaching others about herbs and flowers and stuff. But yeah, like, I think if she hadn't like taken that time, I mean, she, when it first happened, she went to the English coast and spent the winter just foraging seaweed and being in quite like quite like hard conditions. Like, it's like the English winter by the sea, like the waves crashing on the cliffs, and her foraging seaweed, and, you know, and just like stayed in a little cottage on her own. And she was just like, that's just what I needed. I just needed to be like with the elements and lighting a fire at night. And she said that she was like playing this piano and singing and just like, just, you know, just being it all and unapologetic and just like letting it all the emotions come. But I think that the elements and the nature were a real guiding force for her to come out of what could have got, you know, just been loneliness. And I think it's just I'm just looking at some flowers. I'm just like, oh, it's just such a resource to us.
It's a wonder.
Yeah.
Well, you're describing your mother being with herself in nature and singing on the piano, and to me, it sounds like a dream. Really, like in the beginning of COVID, when we had to kind of stop everything and really isolate, I was living very close to the ocean, like 3 minutes away walking from the ocean. And for me, it was like it was so much fun. I got to do like a long yoga practice in the morning, meditate, go to the ocean. For me, it was a dream, but I guess it's kind of like depends on the type of person. Some people like being more with themselves, as I do, and some people really need to be around people, which I enjoy as well, but you know what I mean.
Like nature, like different plants like to be in communities, and then there's other plants that like to, you know, have their own space. Like we are just like, we can look at them and see how similar we are, and nothing, you know, nothing is wrong. It's all a part of it, isn't it?
We are so similar. I so many times learn about life and how my natural cycle should be, not just my moon cycle, but just cycle as life, from looking at nature. Just last night I spoke in one of my classes about the seasons and how each season has its place and its time, and the roots going under the surface when we don't see them, and you know, like all of the lessons that we have from that. So I would love to ask you, what is something that you learned about yourself through spending time in nature?
I think, this past couple of years, I was going to say that I like to be alone more, but then it's funny because I live my life quite 50-50, and I am a real butterfly as well. Like I love to, you know, go from flower to flower and have people here, and be this like mama and host to everyone. And then, but then as well, I do really like it when it all disperses and I can just like be quiet. So I'm not sure.
It's the seasons.
It is, yeah. Yeah, I guess that's the learning, isn't it? That's the learning, is that we all have, yeah, the inner, the spring, summer, autumn, winter. Yeah, I mean, we see that so much with the moon cycle, don't we, as well, that we have, that we literally have that spring, summer, autumn, winter
every month,
and then yeah, every day in some way as well. Certainly for men, isn't it, they go with the sun cycle and we go with the moon cycle. But yeah, what have I learned about myself? I don't know, it's a very hard thing to observe about oneself, isn't it, because you're just being.
I guess that's a lesson within itself, you know, just being. The tree isn't all the time examining and checking and thinking, you know, it's just being.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Maybe you can kind of define and explain foraging.
Yeah, foraging. So I think the foraging simply is getting to know, picking, eating, tasting wild plants, so uncultivated, not grown in your garden. So I think it's the old ways of being. They say that humans were the foragers to begin with. So it's, you know, identifying, getting to know the plants and eating them.
So how could someone start foraging, and where could somebody start if they're interested?
I think it's good to, of course, learn about the plants that are native to you, because that's what you're going to find to forage. And we usually say that on a foraging walk, focus on 5 plants, because it can get, once you start to realize that when you go to a forest or a meadow, that some of the plants are edible, there's a lot of them, and it can get quite overwhelming. So when we do foraging walks, we generally focus on, we try to focus on five plants, but sometimes it goes crazy because it's very exciting. But we try to focus on five at a time when people are learning, because in that way you can really get to know them and come to the plant and speak to the plant, ask them who they are and who's growing around them. Do they need anything? Like often, well, nearly always when we go on a foraging walk, we take extra water to give to the plant if we've picked something from it. You know, it's that give and take, this connection. So we usually do five plants on each walk, and maybe, you know, you, something's really calling to you a lot and it keeps coming up every time you go foraging, well, for the season, because they will probably finish at some point. And then that's, you know, that's someone to really take note of and to discover more about and draw and research and take pictures and things. And then, of course, like there's more sort of practical things with foraging. Of course, like if you're foraging in a city, you wouldn't want to pick plants anywhere that could have been sprayed with chemicals, or that, you know, a dog might have peed on, or, you know, you want to go out somewhere which you feel is natural and organic. And, or, you know, foraging for things that grow in trees is always a good starting point. So like figs and apples, or, you know, blossoms, tree blossoms, like lime blossoms, like you can make amazing teas out of various like apple blossoms and cherry blossoms, and they're generally like very safe things to forage. And of course, you know, get yourself a foraging book that's relevant to wherever you are, because the seasons can be so different country to country and the plants can be so different. And then things like mushroom foraging, I would always go with a pro because the magical kingdom of mycelium, which is the mushroom family, is complicated and incredible, but there's a lot of poisonous ones. So yeah, I mean, I have like a few mushrooms that I am like 100% sure of, and they're the only ones that I will pick. Even if I think like, I think I know that one, I'm still, you know, it's like two mushrooms can look so similar, and then like one has a slightly different smell or like a slightly different texture if you scratch the top of it, and then that's like the deadly poison one, and then the other one's the edible one. So it's just, it's really, yeah, it's a very expert skill, mushroom foraging. And then there's also some families in the plant world which you have to be really, really careful of. So yeah, I mean, with any, like I said, like tree foraging, I think generally is pretty safe. It's fruits. So, but wild herb foraging, mushroom foraging, you really want to know what you're picking, because there's some things like recently in Italy we had, so this year we had the craziest year that I've ever seen for the carrot family. So these are a family of like you can imagine carrots, but they is a huge family, the carrot family. And within it, there's some great things like carrots and cow parsley. And then there's some not so great for human things like hemlock and hogweed. And they, I think a lot of
sounds
them
like Harry Potter.
Yeah. A lot of them are what we call a triannual. So you can have annual, which flowers every year. You can have biannual, which flowers every 2 years. And then triannual, which flowers every 3 years. And I think the ones that we have here must have been bi or triannual, because this year was full everywhere with hemlock, which is deadly, deadly, deadly poisonous.
A deadly carrot?
Yeah, a deadly carrot. And I was like, oh, why is this here?
Because, oh my God.
Because it's, you know, like it looks beautiful. It's got this lovely white flower and it's very showy. And, you know, people like look at it and they're like, oh, I want to put it in my flower crowns and I want to put it on the food. And I'm like, no, please, 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 don't. And it will easily just like sneak its way into the vegetable garden. And then, we had to be very careful of that this year. And also another one of the carrot family called Queen Anne's Lace, which was creating some people. And for some people, it's totally fine to pick and it's beautiful in flower arrangements. And then other people can have quite bad reactions to it. So like my brother had like blisters on his legs from jogging through a field of it. But I had been picking it for all the flower arrangements for Meadow Sweet and nothing had happened to me. So it was weird. And one of the retreat facilitators also picked it to put on a shrine and she said her hands felt itchy and numb. So, you know, yeah, you really have to know what you're picking when it comes to foraging. But I don't want to scare anyone. It's also amazing, incredible thing to learn and can allow you to have your own magical apothecary or amazing food so I definitely recommend learning about it and doing it but to make sure that you know what you're picking.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like I went through all the range of emotions while you were speaking, because first of all, it makes me so inspired to know that all of this is under our noses, you know, like there's these movies about magic fungi and I know there's a tree about book about a book about trees. About how they communicate, like this whole life, all this life that is really this huge and incredible network of just life and plant people, as you say, is always there, and how we, like, on one hand it's exciting and incredible, and on the other hand it kind of made me a little bit sad that we're so disconnected from it and that we have to go and, you know, get a book or learn from somebody else because it's so far away from our just everyday life. But luckily there's people like you that are creating experiences like this that, or like your retreats that allow people to really reconnect.
It's funny, we have all these different guest facilitators that come here and they've got their specialty that the retreat focuses on, like, you know, it could be a yoga teacher or a hypnotherapist or someone who's a tantra therapist, and we then work as a kind of collaborative rental space for them, and they do their retreat, but we always say that no matter what retreat you're hosting, they must at least have one Meadow Sweet workshop for all the guests, which would be, we give them the option, whether it be foraging, permaculture, or some sort of creating with nature. So sometimes I teach them how to make like smoking bundles with the herbs that I grow and forage. And anyway, it always happens that we'll take the group on a foraging walk, and particularly with women, they say that it's their favorite part of the whole retreat, because they have this, when we come together and we start learning about plants, I mean, firstly, it's like almost like, it's so exciting. It's like a treasure hunt. you know, you're walking around and you're finding these things and you're like, oh my God, I've walked past this like so many times and I didn't realize that like I could use it for this, or, you know, it has these magical properties. But also that they say that it's like a remembrance for them. Like they have this almost like a ancestral deja vu that they,
100%.
They're like, I feel so at home right now, being with other women, picking plants, learning about plants, really like homing in and focusing on the herbs and becoming empowered because you have this new knowledge of a plant that could, you know, help you or help your family, you know. And it's so special and rewarding for us to have that feedback and be able to share that thing. And, you know, we're always in contact with everyone afterwards and they say like, wow, I found mugwort, you know, in the forest back where I live, and I've made a tea out of it, or I've made a tincture, and my mum makes special tea blends for everyone and teaches them how to do it and do tea ceremonies and meditation with each plant. And then they're telling us that they've gone and they're doing it every week at home and teaching their kids. And it's just like, it's just the best.
Wow, you just described exactly the words that I was looking for. Like, it really is this remembrance of something that we already know that has been part of us, that is part of us, maybe.
Yeah.
Something that is part of us, and we have grown very far away from it. So I just can't wait until I come visit you. But
yeah, you're gonna love it.
What is something that people misunderstand about our relationship with plants? Hey, I'm quickly interrupting the episode to extend an invitation. If you are interested in deepening into any of the subjects we talk about on the podcast, we offer many different experiences on our beautiful grounds here in Baja, Mexico. From 9-day modules such as sound healing and yoga nidra, to breath and meditation, as well as 200 or 300 hour yoga teacher trainings, and many different shorter retreats. Check out our website, yandara.com, to see all the information about the different experiences. Let's get back to the episode.
I think, like I said before, about the usual way that we think about them just being like an it, and they're just this thing that's for us. It's for us to eat, and there's just not much thought that goes into that for most people, which I feel like, you know, energetically as well, it's not serving its best purpose for us if we're just like, we're just consuming, like we consume so much and we just consume plants, don't we, with not much thought. And I think that that's you know, it's the saddest misunderstanding, really, because like, whether that be how we, it's such a tricky one, isn't it, because there's so many of us and we need them, we need the plants, we need, you know, the you know, the idea of deforestation and cutting down trees always breaks my heart. But then at the same time, I look around and I think, well, we need that though. We love wooden furniture, and what would we do? We would replace everything with plastic and metal. So it's just like, it's, I think, you know, it's coming back to that respect and reverence. And I think if we start to have that, then we create an understanding and we create a preciousness around these living beings, and it starts to slow everything down, you know, like even like I'm talking about with trees and furniture and things like that. if we had a better understanding of them and how they grew and how long it took for them to grow and how much space they needed, and the journey from an acorn to an oak tree, then we might be more conscious in our purchasing and our consuming these beings that are so helpful and wonderful to us. And yeah, I mean, it's a big one to say, because we live in a world where there's already so much of the way everything is already is there, and it's going, and it's so fast, and everything's moving so much. But I think, if we can create some understanding within ourselves, then it's going to be positive for us and the plants in a small or a big way.
Oh, wow. Definitely. What I was thinking about is like the polarities that we exist in, you know, how, I mean, this is also one of the cycles of life, the life, death cycle, and how in order to have the sun, we need to have the darkness, in order to have the good, we need to have the bad, and how everything, even the aspects of life that we see them as negative or not as good, how important they are in all of the process when everything is working in a symbiotic way together. And when you were speaking about like the workshops that you do there and connecting to the plant, for me it really feels like connecting in a way to femininity. Like tending to a plant and this nurturing of the beings that are around us, it feels to me connecting also to the feminine aspects of our being that are so rarely taken into account in the fast-paced life that we live in. I've been thinking about this and speaking about it with my classes lately a lot, because we do live in a culture that really puts a lot of emphasis on the masculine aspects of being, achieving, leadership, power, doing things fast, and, you know, being very extroverted, and not enough emphasis on this quiet time, the silence, the intuition, the feeling of things, the listening to ourselves and nature around us. And in this slowing down, I see a really strong connection to femininity.
Yeah, I really resonate with that. And I think that is also why, I mean, our retreats are a mix, but it definitely has a very, very strong draw to women wanting to connect with their femininity and their feminine essence. And we've had some wild things happen here, I'm sure, as you can imagine, with it being such a magical place, and with me and my mom and my sister running it mostly. But like, for, you know, women that have come and so often seems to be that women are coming here with the intention and the prayers to either, you know, regulate their cycles, or they're trying for a baby, and there seems to be that coming here a lot, which is really beautiful. And I think that being in nature helps us tune back in to us, because you know, like you're talking about this feminine and the masculine, like the feminine is Mother Earth, and you know, the masculine is the sun, and the sun's, you know, blazing and getting everything going, and the earth is nurturing, and they're, you know, working together. But definitely for us to come and ground is speaking to our essence. But yeah, we've had I think the last retreat, there was a woman whose intention from the beginning, she hadn't had her menstrual cycle for, I think it was 2 years, and she had been trying all these different, you know, conventional things to bring it back, and going on birth control and coming off it, and various different things. And she came to Meadowsweet and had this intention that she was hoping to conceive, and in every ceremony we were having her in the prayers, and every foraging walk and all these things like were aligning to her intention. Like, we were walking through the meadow and it was full with mugwort and yarrow, which are these sort of Venus and rose geranium, these Venus ruled womb healing plants that my mum was teaching her about. And then we were making these plant bundles, and we had asked them to either have someone in mind as they weaved, or an intention in mind as they weaved, and each plant that they picked up to speak to it and tell them the prayer that they were putting in that bundle, and whether they kept that bundle on their shrine, or if they decided to burn it and with the smoke send their prayers up. It was full intention, and we shared at the end of it, and everyone, people shared that. One lady said that it was for her niece who was ill, and one lady said it was for her father, and this lady said that it was, she had put in so much mugwort and yarrow, and it was really to bring her body back into her season and her cycles. And my mum said to her, okay, I want you to now go and find a space in the sunlight, and really, really in the sun, and I want you to put that herb bundle on your womb, and I'm going to make you a tea and just meditate and just put that intention into it. And so she went feeling all excited and fearful, and she went and she sun sipped with the bundle and with the tea, and then that evening she was like, she said, oh, I don't know if it's in my head, but I'm feeling this like cramping. Maybe I've got indigestion. Was it the chickpeas? And then, and then the next day she's like, she comes to my mum at the morning tea ceremony. And she's like, Amanda, like, I've got my period this morning. So,
no.
I'm like, oh. Of course we can't say that it was us, but, maybe.
Oh my god, I have goosebumps.
Yeah, and we've had a couple of times like that, and there could be many things at play, like the fact that we're drinking these herbal teas that my mum makes 3 times a day, and the food and the nature and the spring water, and of course all the women being together, and often we have retreats during a full moon, so there's a lot of feminine magic at play here at Meadowsweet. But yeah, it's so beautiful to be witness to these journeys. Wow. Of women coming back to themselves, coming home to themselves.
That's incredible. I feel my heart opening so much with this conversation, I have to tell you. That's incredible. And what I'm thinking, I'm also thinking about men, how important it is for men to connect to their feminine aspect. In my teaching, I meet a lot of men who are very, this is it, baby.
Yeah.
Hello. Oh my god. Hi, Mala. Oh my god, she's beautiful. She's gorgeous. Hi, Mala. I'm so happy you joined us.
Yes, she's a product of it all.
She's gorgeous. Oh my God. She's so lucky to have these gorgeous parents. I don't know her father, but to come from this gorgeous line of women. I know your sister and I've heard of your mother. And she's so beautiful.
Yeah. You were speaking about men and we just this April we started hosting our men's retreats on the land, which my partner organizes, and it's funny because there's amazing the men's work movement at the moment is so beautiful and so needed, and yeah, but I think that my partner Johnny, he said that he sometimes finds it a little bit. He's a gentle, sensitive soul, and he wanted to bring the femininity, I suppose you could call it, of being in nature to the men on the land retreats. And it's quite soft, like it's quite sensitive. The work that they do, they go into the forest and they do family constellations therapy every day. And then they spend the rest of the time working together, foraging, and cooking, and being in nature and doing bushcraft and cooking over fire. And it's really...
it's really hi, Mala.
...connected to nature for them as well.
100%, 100%. I feel that... because men are so disconnected from their feminine aspects of like this gentleness, I see in themselves so much tension, so much holding on to things, so much of just this pressure to hold this, image of what society expects men to be and how harmful and detrimental it is to the men that I see that have spent probably zero time connecting to their feminine aspects. So, connecting to nature, our conversation, like how beautiful it is to connect to the femininity. It's really not just about women. It's really about all of us.
Yeah.
So being a young female entrepreneur in this space of doing good in the world and adding to the world something that is different from the conventional values of financial achievement or kind of status, and just being someone adding good to the world as a female entrepreneur, what are some of the qualities that you needed to have and cultivate within yourself to do this?
I think, of course, as any entrepreneur, there has to be a lot of drive there. There's been times with the retreats where I've thought, like, is this going to work? Are people going to come? I mean, especially in the first year, I wasn't sure how it was going to go, but I had a lot of trust in that my passion and my intention was pure and soulful, and I was able to bring together a team and community to help me along the way and to help me make this vision come about. I was listening to a podcast with Radhika Das a couple of days ago, and he said something. He was talking with Zach Avery, who's the founder of Medicine Festival in England, and he was saying that he realized that when you're on your own, you can go quick, and when you're in a team, you can go far, or something along those lines. He was quoting, I think it's quite like a well-known quote, but it made me think, like, I remember in the first, throughout my career, I've always been like, I'll do this myself kind of thing. And it's true. Like I have got places fast, and but it's been a big challenge, which is great because it means that I'm very versatile. I have all these different skills. I've always like done my website myself and the socials myself and bookings and creating names for the retreats and the ideas and the menus and then the gardens. And then when I got pregnant, I realized that I was going to have to create a team, and that was really interesting for me as an entrepreneur to like, I guess like, you know, I'm a bit of a control freak as well, so there was that like coming into to a team and community, and you know, sharing the responsibility. And and it's funny, you know, we're talking about feminine and masculinity. I noticed a big shift into my femininity when I started to work more in a team way. Before that, and even like some of my volunteers that were here at the beginning when I first started, where I think I was quite like in this like boss woman mode from before when I worked as a restaurant consultant, and I was always the manager and the boss, and I was directing a lot of teams, and I wouldn't be in the team as such, as I would just be overseeing things. And I had kind of that attitude last year when I first started Medisuite, even though I had this pure intention, I still had this like mindset. And I think that I was very like, this needs to be done at this time. And I was like, oh, fine, I'll just do it myself. And I'd run across the site and I'd do this and I'd do that. And like, and everyone would always say, like, we never see Anya walking. She's always running. So even though I was in this like place of nature and everything, I would always be like running from place to place. Like I was like, okay, you need edible flowers, I'm a runner. Okay, this room needs to be clean, I'm a runner. And I was like in the first retreats, I would be like it was great in a way, but I would be the handy woman, the chef, the plumber, because the showers would always break, and like I would be the driver, all of these things. And then I got pregnant and I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna have to like now say like, okay, I'm gonna get, at the beginning I only had one volunteer, like one helper. So it was like me, my mum, and one volunteer, and I would do the cooking from sunrise to, you know, after dinner time. And then I got pregnant and I was like, oh, I'm gonna have to like learn a new way of being. So my business changed and I started to, yeah, like, you know, put some finances in different places so that I had help, which was a really good learning for me. And I think as an entrepreneur, of, you know, female or whatever, that's a really amazing thing to be able to do, and also such a valuable tool to helping your business grow, is if you can share the load and share the business and trust in others in you know, with the workload, because then yeah, you can go so much further rather than being like, I'm gonna do all these things myself because I know best, I know how I want this, and then you're like, oh yeah, but when do I do it, because I've got no time. So yeah, I feel that was a really big learning for me, and now I've got like a good team, and I've got volunteers that join me for a few retreats. I have an amazing assistant, my sister's in the team here, and my partner and my mom, and yeah, we've got, you know, and I hope to grow that more, so that, you know, we become a crew, like a bigger crew and a bigger community, and we can take Medisuite into expanding a little bit, maybe doing retreats in other places, and yeah, and just keep it going, and let it be a baby that is cared for by a village and not just me.
How it should be.
It's how it should be. And I think that makes work so much more enjoyable. I know that, like, for myself, I had some time where I always felt like it proved a lot doing everything myself, and it proved, like, my success and things like that. Like, I'd be like, oh, I did it all myself. But
it's not fun to be at the top by yourself.
We have that ingrained, don't we? It's like that. I went to a women in business training in New York a few years ago, and the woman leading it said something that stuck with me about how when we're women in business, there's one seat at the dinner table for the woman, and all the women are fighting over that one seat. And then with men in business, they've got a whole dining room, seats at the table. And, like, why is that? And why do we have, and you know, why do we have this competition with other women for that one seat at the table? Like, we should really be pulling the seat out for each other and gathering together and cooking together. And
definitely.
Yeah. And I think that, yeah, and I think, you know, that is really starting to happen now in the women's spaces, the women's circle spaces, and we're supporting one another, which is amazing, rather than competing with one another, you know, being the best, most famous yoga teacher or the best, you know, this or that, and looking at one another and going, oh, I wish I had that, and actually just like collab, and then realizing actually we can all go so much further if we all support one another, if we acknowledge and celebrate each other's individualities and the beauty of coming together and being in community and supporting one another. I see it as well, which is, you know, we're talking about the men's space. It's really nice to see that in the men's space now as well, with men's work and them having this brotherhood. And I feel that, you know, that's helping. When we do that in our worlds, you know, we're healing the wounds from each other, and everything's just coming together and being much better.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, to kind of wrap things up, I want to read you a line from the website and ask you about it. You wrote, at Meadow Sweet Retreat, we believe self-love is the foundation of personal growth. So I wanted to ask you, how do you cultivate self-love?
In me personally? Well, I think something that's really present for me at the moment is this idea of self-love in me being a mother, because when Mala came into the world and I start to think about everything that she's seeing and she's hearing and she's learning, I realized that whatever I was doing or whatever I was feeling about myself was, she would observe it, and I started to notice how ingrained it is in all of us men to be vocalizing the stuff that we don't like about ourselves. I'm noticing it a lot in my family, and, you know, whether it be like, oh, I feel so fat today, or oh, I don't feel like I've done this well enough. And I've really tried to start to have a conscious effort to be vocal about what I love about myself and what I'm doing great at, because I know that those things that we say that we don't like about ourselves, it's just like, you know, these criticisms that we've just learned, and, you know, don't really, they're often irrelevant, or they're often just societal norms that we're comparing ourselves with, like, you know, being this enough or that enough or not this enough. So now when after Marla has breakfast and she's covered in food, we go to the mirror and I wash her off, and we just do affirmations, and I tell her all these affirmations about myself and all these lovely things about myself, and then all these lovely things about her, and that's my, like, a really daily practice that I'm trying to bring into our lives, to be conscious of bringing that self-love and positivity into us. And it's really, like, you know, it's been really lovely for me. And then my partner's heard us doing it, and then he's come in and he started saying things that he loves about himself, which he, you know, he wouldn't usually. And Phoebe came in, my sister, the other day, and she was like, oh yeah, I love my hair as well. And, you know, and, you know, we talk about we'll talk about our gratefuls to each other, and me and my partner in front of Marla will say the different things that we've been feeling grateful for, about ourselves and about each other, and just like, just cultivating that in our family. And they talk about, you know, you are the product of the five closest people around you. So we hope that that will, you know, bring so much positivity in her, but then also the people that are around us, if we're changing our mindsets to have that gratitude and self-love for ourselves in whichever way that may be, that others will then feel that they can feel the same way about themselves.
That's just so beautiful. I got emotional there for a moment. What a beautiful gift that is for your daughter, and to grow up in this way, and also the journey that you've been on with this whole process of being a mother, and actually, like, having to teach another human being how to be a human. Like, that's such a big mm-hmm. responsibility and such a gift mm-hmm. that there are mothers like you in the world. And it really, you know, brought up to me how true that is. We always allow ourselves to, like, bring ourselves down around other people. Like, I'm not this, I'm not that. And it's considered normal to do it and okay. But on the other hand, it's not considered normal to give ourselves compliments and to say mm-hmm. what we're good at and to say, like, good things about ourselves. It's considered conceited or, like, full of ourselves.
Yeah, no, it's silly. It's so silly. Like, why? I think that we get a bit confused with, like, humbleness and then, like, self-deprecation.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not the same. But we think that, like, if we say in front of, like, someone, like, "Oh, I'm not," you know, then, you know, they kind of, it makes maybe it makes the other person feel something, like, good about themselves, so then they'll like us more. I don't know, there's a weird human thing, but actually we all actually just feel much better if we're all just positive about ourselves, because then it gives us permission to be positive about our, you know, if they're saying that they love their, you know, it's like that amazing practice of just, like, being naked with each other, and then when everyone's naked, you're all like, oh wow, we're all, you know, gorgeous and weird and wonderful in our own way, and like, why, you know, why have I been thinking that this was too big or too small or too this and too that? Like, we're all just, you know, plant people. We've all just got different petals and leaves, but they're all beautiful.
Exactly. You can't say about one flower that it's beautiful and another that it's not. Like, we're just different flowers. And I love that the world is starting to change its perceptions about that, that it's not just one way of being. It's not just one way that is good. And how I love that, that we're all just plant people. So just as a last question, I always ask, what are you curious about right now, Anya?
I have just started reading a book called Occult Botany. So it's all about, it's a book transcribed from a book written in the early 1800s. And wow. It's all about using plants in magic. So I've just read the introduction and I flicked through a few pages and it cites some plants that we have growing here. So I'm quite curious to take some time when my daughter's asleep to find the plants that grow here and see how I can use them in magic.
I love that. Let me know what you find.
Yeah, I will.
Is there anything else that you would like to add?
I think it's been a really wonderful chat and I've really enjoyed sharing. It always makes me realize when I start talking about plants, like what a absolute flower nerd I am.
I love it. You totally inspired me to hug my plants and go out in nature.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to going outside now. I keep looking at the sunflowers outside my window and just like, yeah, you know what's up.
Amazing. Well, Anya, I had such a good time. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you too. It's been wonderful.
Now, after this time to nurture your mind and your spirit, we invite you to take a moment to consider others. A kind wish might come to mind. Know that what we learn becomes more valuable when we apply it and share it with others. So share this episode on Instagram stories, tag Yandara and I, or share with a loved one so that more people can benefit from it. Our hope is that the search will lead you home to who you already are, to what was always there. We'll be back next week with more inspiration, honest conversation, and insight into the energetic world around us. Thank you for listening and watching.